All right, welcome back to another episode of the Baseball America Prospect Podcast. We are continuing on forging ahead with our prospect deep dives across all 30 teams. Today, I am joined by my colleague, Jesus Cano. Jesus, we are talking Colorado Rockies. It was a lot of buildup for me to then tell the people we're talking Rockies today. Not the most talented organization in the game. I think that's kind of top to bottom at this point. But we have had some shakeups in the front office. So before we kind of go into our typical questions, why don't we start there? What's sort of the feelings around Colorado and the Rockies organization now, maybe among those? You're out in Arizona, so baseball is kind of 24/7, 365 days a year out there, unlike most places. So sort of, are there any things kind of slipping out about change in approach under Di Podesta, or sort of, you know, what the potential perspective is on certain players in the organization? Like, how are we moving forward? Obviously, he's known from being a character in Moneyball, more or less, then, you know, going and working with the Mets, and then, of course, was mostly recently in the football world with the Cleveland Browns. So coming back to baseball after some time off, it is kind of an interesting move. He was kind of one of the early analytics people, we'll say. But things have evolved quite a bit since the Moneyball days at this point.
Yeah, of course. And I think the biggest hope in the sense of it, I know the Rockies, you know, have just gone through so much, you know, in terms of as an organization with them being able to construct a quality roster. I mean, it's optimism, but at the same time, it's pressure, you know, and it's pressure because it's the first year of something fresh, something new. And I think the hiring of Di Podesta just shows that, you know, the Rockies, you know, front office and everybody finally understands what needs to be done, right? It wasn't just, you know, front office. There was a lot of coaching changes. But for the most part on the farm system, you know, they kept the farm director, Chris Ford, and most of the guys that were in that coaching development system down there. And so it seems like from you know, just that action and a lot of things that I've heard within the organization is that they are optimistic of the guys that they have right now. And, you know, this did rank as the, you know, towards the lower end of the of our farm rankings. But, you know, there's plenty to build upon of. You know, you look at the top, which we'll get into a little bit more. You know, there's players that could, you know, at its best, if they figure it out, are going to be very good major league players. And there's players at the bottom that have quite a bit to do, although that's kind of the resounding thing within the entire organization. So it's plenty of optimism, a lot, like I said, a lot of pressure, which isn't normal to hear when you start like a fresh slate and you bring somebody in. I mean, the Rockies have just been bad for a very long time. Sure, there's flashes here and there, but they've also proven in the past that despite the challenges that Coors Field may present, you know, that they can develop a winning baseball team like you saw in the early 2000s and stuff like that. So in a homegrown town, no less, but a lot of the players that came through that system, obviously, you know, I was a young child when that was happening. I know you were can vividly remember everything else going on. So as it turns to the page and stuff like that, I mean, starting with Ethan Holliday, getting somebody who has, you know, bloodlines that are connected to the Rockies and a player you had heading into the draft had the established track record, I think is really optimistic top to bottom with everything they got going on. But there is a lot of work that needs to be done.
Yeah, I think, you know, just to put it into perspective, the Rockies, you know, in existence since 1993, entering 2023, had never had a 100 loss season. They've now had three consecutive 100 loss seasons, including 119 loss season last year. And by many metrics outside the wins and loss column, they are considered to be one of the worst teams, 2025 Rockies we're talking about, in the modern era. So things have really, really bottomed out. And I think what's kind of interesting, and I know we're kind of going off board here a little bit, I think what's interesting when you look at the Rockies and prior to me handing you over this jewel of an
was that your form of having me pay your dues?
Yeah, exactly. I had written the Rockies for years, even prior to me coming here. So, you know, at my previous spot, Prospects Live, I had always done the Rockies farm system, and, you know, I had Hartford near me, so it was an affiliate that I saw on a regular basis. And at that point in time, like, they had been coming off of a couple of playoff appearances in like 2017 and 2018. There was some depth in the farm system. They weren't as far behind at that point in time as they've kind of fallen. And they've had guys like over the last couple of years who come up and have one good year and then aren't able to repeat it. You know, Brenton Doyle had a huge year in 2024, unable to repeat it. This past season, it was Hunter Goodman. We'll see, you know, the jury's still out if he can repeat his success in 2026. A couple of years ago before that, it was Ezekiel Tovar. He's really regressed or just really not improved the approach as a hitter. And I think that's one of the big question marks you have to have is, you know, is there going to be an overhaul of the hitting development focus? Because I feel like it's never been, at least maybe now, but a few years ago when I was covering the system, it wasn't a lack of talent, Jesus, as much as it was the talent just stayed the same. Mm-hmm. The guy that you saw on the complex or an A-ball very rarely was much different from the player that you saw in Double A. And that's a problem. There needs to be progress along the way. It's the reason that we have a sport where guys don't just walk out of the first round, you know, into the starting lineup of their respective organizations on day one. It's why we have the minor leagues and we have player development, et cetera, because there was a lot that you need to learn and adjust, you know, in the professional game. So I think that's sort of the thing that we need to see with the Rockies. Now, that said, let's move on to the first guy here who is kind of a prime example of old Rockies. I'm not so sure how successful this guy could have been. We're hoping, we don't know this, but we're hoping with the new regime, maybe a new focus, that Ethan Holiday can take a step forward and kind of put a really difficult pro debut in the rear view. How difficult was it to rank him at number one, you know, with a highly touted prospect in his own right, Charlie Condon, who had his own struggles in early point in pro ball? How difficult was it to rank Holiday over him, talking to scouts out there throughout the game that, you know, opposing scouts, et cetera? How much of a debate was it at one?
No, it was relatively easy decision to be able to put him at number one overall. I mean, heading into the draft, you know, Ethan Holiday's name kind of kind of name got into circulation. It's always been there just being, you know, from the family lineage that comes into play. But you saw what he was able to do in the showcases and everything leading up to the draft. It was good. And like you mentioned, you know, the Rockies' number two prospect is Charlie Condon and obviously had a lot of struggles. You know, there was a little bit of progression with some swing and miss stuff, but there was still concerns and issues. I mean, he's not even a top 100 guy for us right now. And he's also moved to first base only, it seems like. And it's just really hard to be able to kind of catapult your way up with the defensive versatility if you're just a first base guy and your bat isn't popping as per se somebody like a Nick Kurtz did a couple, you know, around this time last year as games started to begin. So putting Holiday at number one was easy, but you know, it was a little bit concerning to see his pro debut, to be specific. You know, I mean, we were looking at the numbers, we were all working on it together, and obviously has plus raw power with an advanced pitch recognition. But when you see what happened down in Fresno, there was a lot of extreme swing and miss. I mean, a 39% strike percentage and a 42% whiff rate, you know, against really quality stuff in the zone. And I was actually just editing one of our Oracle reports right now that were submitted to us, and reading it was specifically about Ethan Holiday and the struggles that he had. And a couple of people within the coaching staff down in low A Fresno did say that it was a timing thing too, that he was fouling off a lot of the pitches that, you know, just could have just been passed through and stuff like that, or stuff that, you know, if he would have maybe time, you know, 0.1 seconds a little bit earlier would have resulted from a hit to a foul ball. But I think, you know, that's just what it is. His swing, you know, from some scouts that I've talked to have said that it looks a little bit long and didn't make the proper adjustments when he was up there. But when you look at the untapped potential, I think we're just measuring, you know, what we saw in his pro debut in under 2019 games, whatever the exact situation was. But, you know, stands at 6'4", is definitely the more, you know, more Jack brother between him and Jackson, has the more height, has the more muscle. Whether he remains at shortstop or not is going to be a mystery just as he continues to grow. I mean, his frame is pretty big already what it is, and at 18 years old, there's room to grow, room to add muscle. Is he going to be mobile enough to play there? Is it somewhere where you change him to third base? I've even heard some scouts say that he could ultimately end up as an outfielder. But, you know, season starting off, you know, more than like he'll start in low A, and then I'll get to see him plenty down here in the and down at the complexes and stuff like that. But it was a relatively easy decision, especially with this organization, respectfully.
Yeah. See, I don't know. I actually think, there's a case for Condon.
Really?
And I'll say, like, well, Ethan Holiday's draft stock was not as high as maybe it was billed, even internally. There were major question marks around the hit tool dating back to when he was a high school junior. there was always swing and miss here. He's not twitchy or athletic. You know, he's a below average athlete. I honestly think there's a good case that Holiday ends up at first base long term. And you look at the bat to ball ability. I mean, the coaching staff can say, I'm sorry, I'm pushing back on this, but the coaching staff can say foul balls. It was a 39.2% in zone whiff rate. That like just to put it into perspective, right? Like we get all over Spencer Jones. All right. Spencer. And it's a bigger sample size, but it's also at a higher level. He's an older player. That was a 32% in zone whiff rate. I mean, it was catastrophically bad. Almost to the point that if I actually think that they did Holiday a disservice by him even playing in games after the draft, you know. And some of that might be, you know, the organization. Because, like, for example, like Connor Griffin got shut down after the draft. He was a guy that there were some questions regarding the swing. There were adjustments that were made. There were 6 or 7 months of hard work behind the scenes to get that to where it needed to be. Ethan Holiday, even beyond the Rockies, has all of the resources available to him to make the adjustments that he needs to get to more consistent contact. Because as you said, the power is plus. I mean, a 105.5 90th percentile EV as an 18-year-old out of the draft is 70 grade when you look at it age to level and all that sort of stuff. And he catches a ton of barrels. It was a 26% barrel rate, really high. All of his launch angle data was pretty good on the hard hit stuff. Like when he actually hit the ball hard, which when he did hit it was fairly frequently, 13.2 degree launch angle. So pretty good. He's catching barrels there. 9 degree pull side launch angle. He's able to pull the ball in the air pretty consistently. So like his damage numbers, like his ex Wobicon numbers, where they kind of remove contact and approach from the equation, were excellent. The approach is fine. It's passive. He doesn't chase a ton. When I kind of look at those numbers, Jesus, I look at like the difference between swing rate and chase rate. He's got a pretty low swing and chase rate. So he takes a lot of pitches for strikes as well, which I think doesn't help. So I wonder how like discerning his eye is, frankly. And I think there's this could track to like a 30 hit tool. Now it might be 70 power and he's got an arm. And unlike most prospects, he has, you know, a big leaguer for a brother and a big leaguer, you know, all-star, former all-star for father. So there's resources there, a ton of coaches in the family as well. Of course, the Oklahoma State connection. So I wouldn't write it off, but I think by the same token, we can talk a little bit about Charlie Condon here. It was really bad after the draft. I think that he struggled with some injuries. He didn't have a terrible season. He really didn't. Plus underlying power. The contact wasn't awful. 21% in zone whiff rate, just comparatively. Really good swing decisions from Condon. Low chase rate, higher swing rate for a guy with a chase rate as low as he has. Another guy that has excellent angles. Like I think there's like a three true outcome first baseman here who could maybe pop like 25 to 30, and he'll probably get a little bit of a boost from the batting jump balls and play bump at Coors. I don't know. Like, I don't want to completely write off Condon because it's not like I think Holiday is like some defensive wizard or specimen that has, or even is that much better of a hitter if he even is a better hitter. Like, I feel like there's similar concerns with both profiles, but you know, that may also be an indictment of like what the acquisition process is like for the Rockies a little bit. You didn't do this system last year, so this is an interesting question for us to talk about. But do you think this system is better or worse from the point that you took over at the beginning of the season to now, we'll say? How much has it improved or gotten worse? Because you did add Ethan Holiday, and it's not like they graduated, you know, any like, real
players or anything like that. I think it just slightly got a little bit better. I mean, some you know, they added obviously some college bats, and they added plenty of pitching help too in a lot of the trades, the Ryan McMahon trade, and a couple other ones that they would do. You know, a lot of Yankees pitching prospects came over. So, I mean, it's slightly better than it was last year, but it's not like it took leaps and steps. I mean, still, you know, bottom tier farm system for us. I don't know. I mean, you had this last year, I guess, just had a glimpse, especially since you guys helped me a lot doing this process. What do you think?
I mean, like, I think it's a little bit better. And there's also like some of that is based on the premise of there's some hope in the system, which is, I think, something that really did not exist previously, you know, with this organization, right? It was kind of the bottomless pit of nothing's ever going to change and they're going to keep on doing the same thing over and over and over again. So now at least, and I don't know if it's reality or not, but now at least there feels to be some element of like, oh, this could potentially get better. And I don't think that we were necessarily at that point last year. So yeah, I think it's a little better. And you know, you did get, you know, one of the top prep bats in the class, one way or another. So yeah, I mean, it's a bad farm system, but it's hard to say that it got any worse year over year after, you know, a full draft class and, you know, some trades at the deadline. You know, it's still not a super deep system, but you do have, you know, a couple of guys here in the top 10, you know, from this most recent draft class. And I would argue that maybe a couple of breakouts too, and a guy like Roldy Brito and Jackson Cox, who kind of finally was healthy and down the stretch, I think was much better than a lot of people even realize. And it's kind of an interesting arm. So yeah, I would say I agree. I think the system has gotten a little bit better. Let's move on to the next one. All right. I don't think this is going to change, but who's your guess to be number one? Are there any other candidates outside of Holiday?
I mean, the only other guy who I can truly think about that has the potential to go up, I know I'm a big Roldy Brito guy, but I just don't see him eclipsing perhaps the number one potential. But a guy that I think outside of our top 10, I mean, top 10 specifically, I think Jackson Cox, like you mentioned, if he just continues the progression that he showed, specifically being able to remain healthy for one, which is what he was able to do, but especially towards the end of the season, you know, show his mix off and actually be able to throw for strikes and throw for chase and stuff like that. I think he has a possibility to end up as a top three guy next year. Is he number one potential? I'm not sure. I'm not entirely sure. But I think J.B. Middleton, the pitcher that they selected out of Southern Miss this past year, if they don't, you know, if he, you know, still remains a prospect with the next year, which I think should happen next year, I think he has the potential to kind of eclipse that. You know, it was a really tough decision between him and Wellington Herrera to have at the number 10 spot. I just like Wellington Herrera's stuff a little bit more, and I think that he is going to be a solidified closer eighth inning guy down the road. But Middleton, you know, three above average pitches, strong control for gains, you know, has a limited ceiling because he has a smaller frame. But I think he's somebody that could potentially catapult his way up there. But if not, I'm banking on Holiday again. If I was a betting man, I think it would be Holiday. Just looking at these names again as a refresher, it's just I don't see anybody else.
Yeah, and you know, it's not it's not like there's a wealth of options within the organization, and then on top of it, because of the way the draft is now with the lottery, the Rockies picked 10th this year. So despite having an all-time bad record for the organization and one of the worst in history, they don't even pick in the top five, right?
The first night sucks.
Yeah. So
yeah.
Exactly. So we'll see how this all works out, but they're probably not going to get a player at 10. That's going to rank above Holiday unless Holiday has an astronomically bad season. And as much of a hater as I was early in the show, I'm not going to bank on that. I'm not going to bank on him being that bad. I do think he's still a top 100 prospect, et cetera. So here's the last one. This might be the trickiest question you're going to get all day long, Jesus. What is this organization good at developing? Silence.
I mean, what is this organization? Can this organization develop? I think it's, I don't know. I think feel like they pushed their international guys a little too quickly. I just don't know. I don't want to say like false hope or anything like that or anything. You know, I'm not trying to be it, but it's just how do you assess the hitting hasn't been good, the pitching hasn't been good. You know, I mean, role players, one and duns, you know, Hunter Goodman, if, you know, continues, you know, if he regresses this year, like we mentioned, Tovar and stuff like that. I think at this one, it's got to give the hitters. I mean, there's just, I don't know, Jeff, this is kind of really, like you mentioned, I totally forgot this question was going to be asked and you saw the reaction on my face, but
I don't think there is a good answer. Cause like even some of the other bad organizations, I think have had more development wins than the Rockies have.
Yeah.
Like my mind kind of goes to these athletic outfielders like a Brenton Doyle. I think Nolan Jones was an example of that. So if this question was asked to me last year, I would have said those types, you know, guys that have power and kind of like tools and are, you know, really outstanding defensive players in the outfield, they kind of get them to a place where like their hit tools are kind of, you know, good enough. And I would have said Jordan Beck could be the next version of that. But none of those guys have sustained those gains year over year.
And you have guys with that profile like Cole Carrick, Robert Callas. I mean, Zach Bean for the longest. And, you know, Sterling Thompson can hit, but doesn't really have a position. So they just kind of have him out there in the outfield. But, yeah, it just hasn't been able to transfer. Cool.
And I think Thompson, like, you needed to, like, really maximize the power there, you know, and the angles. Because he was never going to have a defensive position. You needed that bat to be as good as possible for him to really be. So like they just don't seem to focus on like the right parts of each player's game, which is what I think is a really defining characteristic for the best player development organizations. But I think a lot of teams at this point are doing that. You know, I think this is up to this point and this could change. It was kind of exclusive to the Rockies of being kind of very old, you know, hat in terms of their approach to player development, etc. All right, Jesus, this is the end of the video portion of this podcast. So if you're watching us on YouTube, thank you for tuning in. For those of you listening to the podcast version of this, stick around. We still have a few more questions. We're still going to go a little deeper into this Rockies farm system, but we're going to do that right after this quick break. All right, and we are back. We are talking Rockies farm system here in the Baseball America Prospect Podcast. It's your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me is Jesus Cano. Jesus, let's get into the first of the back-end questions here. Who are some of the sleepers after the top 10? Do they actually have any of those in this system?
I think they do, and I may be a little bit not necessarily more biased, but because I got to see a lot of these guys play in person, them a lot more than most people because I'm down here at the Complex League. But I think Wilder Dally specifically, third baseman that played on their ACL team and eventually got promoted to low A Fresno. I think he was a guy who wasn't as touted in the international signing class that he was a part of, kind of forgot it, and just over the years has really grown into the body and just has gained the ability to hit, you know, had really strong contract rates and is, you know, has physical projection as a switch hitting corner guy. Is he going to be able to hold down the position? I think he'll be able to. I mean, he's I think relatively, you know, maxed out potentially for his age, both physically and has really good swing, his swing length and his breaking balls, I think, and recognition against breaking balls is something that's kind of held him back a little bit more. And he could add a little bit versatility to his third base profile too. But I think he's somebody that kind of sprung out a little bit this past year with the Complex. And they had really good players. Obviously, we talked about Roldy, who at one point, you know, I had at, you know, number 11 in my rough draft of the top 30. And eventually, you know, with the convincing and obviously consulting with you guys, he skyrocketed to the top 5. I think he was a pleasant surprise within the system to see. But obviously, we're talking about guys outside the top 10. And I think Wilder Dalius has that potential. And I think another guy, too, at a number the last year's DSL MVP, Christian Arguelles, you know, an outfielder for the Rockies, you know, was a DSL product for them where they did really good and had elite contact and zone control. I mean, this is a guy who was able to hit most of the balls that came with me, doesn't have a lot of power or anything like that, but he was able just to make contact all over the field. It probably isn't going to max out to any type of power or anything like that, but plays solid defense. You know, the contact skill, like I mentioned, it's borderline, you know, close to really, really good. And I think, you know, he'll be in the ACL this upcoming year, which is what I've been told by people within the organization. So I'm excited to see him. He already comes with the, you know, the decoration and the fanfare, having winning the DSL MVP. But I expect him to kind of have like a Roldy Brito type season, except the biggest difference is Roldy Brito didn't have the hype coming into it.
Yeah. 18.4% whiff rate for Arguelles. That's pretty ridiculous. So, excuse me, lots of bat to ball skills there. like the underlying performance was good. The EVs are below average, but he's 18, you know, complex ball. Like typically, you know, that could jump a little bit. It was like a 98 mile per hour, 90th percentile, which is obviously not good. Did have a 107.
And they felt like he was ready enough to make the jump after, because I believe he's a DSL repeater. He had enough to play, you know, be one and done in the DSL, but they wanted to really let him mature and grow into his body a little bit more. And obviously, you know, that ended up being the right call to do, because he went out and won the MVP out there for the Rockies, and just kind of bolsters up what they got going down on the lower level specifically.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. And they honestly, covering the system for years, they have a lot of DSL repeaters, like whether pitchers or hitters. They seem to have just a ton of DSL guys that spend a couple of years there, and then they come stateside and they move them too quickly, as you said. What I wanted to ask you about is, it's such a weird pitcher. And I was always lower on him than consensus with Sean Sullivan. And I've seen Sullivan dating back to when he was in high school. And I don't think that he has added a mile per hour onto that fastball in that point in time. I mean, it is mid. I saw him in 2024, Jesus, and he was sitting 86 miles an hour on his fastball. His parents were in front of me too. The place was packed, and his parents were in front of me, and it was like, oh, I can't make any comments at all. I got to be really, really careful about what I say here. But he's so unusual because it's a weird angle. Yeah, like he sat 87 this year. So it's like 86 to 88. He touched 90.8. That was his peak velocity. It's a really weird angle because it's a lower slot. So it's like a 5'3" release height. He got 7.5 feet of extension. So he gets way down the mound. There's a ton of arm side run. There's a reasonably high amount of ride for how low his arm slot is. So the fastball plane is unique, and he really commands his changeup and his slider, but it's so soft. So like, I don't know how many conversations you had about Sullivan throughout the process.
Plenty.
But yeah, I'm always interested what other, like what scouts think about him, because I just don't know how this could work outside of just being a really weird look reliever for an inning. He's almost like Loogie from years ago.
Like when I was talking to a couple scouts, one answer that stood out to me when I mentioned him, I mean, do you think somebody, you know, with the mid 80s fastball could have success in the major leagues? That's a common question I ask. One scout paused and said, name one player who's having success with a mid 80s fastball right now. And maybe outside of Ryan Yarbrough. There's absolutely nobody that's been able to do that. But I mean, the angle is really funky. Like for anybody who's ever seen, what's it called? Charles Barkley's golf swing. I feel like that's kind of what his delivery is. It's very funky. It's very weird. It's very unorthodox, but it just makes it hard to read. And it's just like, how is this able to happen? Even when players know that, you know, a cutter down the middle is coming in, you know, a fastball down the middle is coming in. Like they just can't able to get to read it. And I mean, it is a really funky delivery. I think out of all the pitchers that I watched for this one, his delivery was the one specifically that I just kept on looking, because it's like you see it, it looks uncoordinated, it's like all the success that he's able to get. And it's, you know, a lot of scouts who I've talked to kind of, you know, are split between like, yeah, he can be good, but he'll maybe just be a bulk reliever, you know, a guy that comes in when the game's, you know, either out of hand or, you know, whatever way it is, right? A guy that makes an occasional spark start for two or three innings and then you go back and whatever, right? But it's just really tough to be able to project how he's able to have success. And I mean, they're riding it all the way through, you know, they plan to continue to develop him as a starter until something tells them they're not. So it's going to be interesting to see how he goes. And he's not too far away either from knocking on the door of the majors. You know, I mean, if he continues it at some point, like we are going to find out that answer when he's throwing, you know, that fastball at Coors Field or wherever it goes, right?
Wherever it goes could be an interesting angle, a way to end that conversation, because it might go far, far, far away. I wanted to ask you about Zach Veen as we wrap up here. At one point in time, it was the number one overall pick in that 2020 draft class full of high school outfielders, a lot of which who have not panned out at all. Veen is still 24 years old for all of 2026. Is there any hope? He made his major league debut, but is there any hope around Veen finally taking that step forward and establishing himself as a major leaguer? The numbers don't look bad, 289, 359, 464 on their face. But for AAA and the PCL, it was a 95 WRC plus. So just to put that into perspective, those numbers sound good for the major leagues and most baseball leagues outside of Little League or a high school league. But that was 5% below league average in the PCL. He doesn't run as much as he used to. The power has never taken that step forward, and the hit tool doesn't look, or the on-base ability doesn't look as good as it once did. What are the conversations around Veen? Because my last year covering him, he was, you know, limited to like 110 games between two seasons. So a lot of it could be kind of washed away with the injuries. What was the feedback like on Veen?
Well, I do want to, I know this is the podcast version of it only right now, but I did want to pull out the Zach Veen bobblehead that I got while I was in college, the Fresno Grizzlies win. And there was a lot of conversations going on about Zach Veen, a lot of them not too positive, you know, as his bobblehead was right here in front of me. So there was a lot subjected to that. But with that being said, you know, I think you look at where he was last year, and it seemed like every time I was writing the list and I placed him somewhere new, there would be some sort of negative feedback that would just impact my ranking on him based on scouts conversations and stuff like that. And I mean, he's an athletic guy, right? And we mentioned that the Rockies have a specific, you know, type of guys that they like to draft and attempt to develop. And I think Veen fits into that mold from a body perspective and from a positional perspective. But it's like you mentioned, like, there just hasn't been the seasoning that you've been able to see. You know, he's always had that power speed blend when he's healthy, but he's historically just hasn't, you know, he showed solid play discipline and pitch recognition, but once it's time to execute it and stuff like that, there just isn't really a lot of work that could be able to do and stuff like that. I think the fact that he's still relatively young, has a good size around 6'3", 190. I think that there's still hope that he'd be able to develop a little bit more. But, I mean, this guy was drafted in, I believe, 2020, right? He was a 2020 guy. And it's been, it's almost been, you know, kind of 6 years since that draft, which is kind of crazy to say out loud, right? And there just hasn't been the progression or anything that they've ever seen so far. I think, you know, the fact that he's so athletic, I think kind of helps him and still stick around for this long. But, you know, he had a chance to you know, win a position last year into spring training, wasn't there when he got his opportunity down the road. It just wasn't able to translate and stuff like that. So he just hasn't panned out yet. And I don't know if, you know, they'll make the adjustments, stuff like that, to be able to do that. I don't know, you know, whatever color he wants to dye his hair purple last year, I don't know what it'll be, if that'll help him or anything like that. But I think there's this hope that, you know, that hype, certainly since he was last drafted, has certainly faded. And I'm, you know, we'll obviously see him a decent amount in spring training and stuff like that, but I don't think there's a lot of optimism around it from like an evaluations perspective. But who knows, maybe now under this new regime and stuff like that, they do something different and they're able to jump in and untap potential, and potentially it stands out.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to kind of track. You know, he was, he's been on the 40 man for a couple of years now, obviously, you know, has used an option. So, you know, there's a good chance he's back up in the major leagues this year. You know, maybe he's the guy that that breaks out under this new regime. They tap into the untapped Zach Veen potential. We shall see. All right, Jesus, I want to thank you for joining me and talking through this Rockies farm system. Once again, my apologies for handing this off to you. But you're out there in Arizona. You see these guys much more frequently than I do. And hopefully...
I'm happy to say that, like, out of all my top 30, I think I saw at least half of those guys. I saw everybody in the top 10, and same thing for the Mariners. I saw a lot of those guys. So that's something I take a lot of pride in. So, yeah. And, you know, Salt River Fields is about, you know, 15 minutes away from me. So it's fantastic being able to drive down that road. Not as fun going over to Peoria to watch the Mariners, but definitely better to go watch them down the Rockies down at Salt River. So I enjoyed it, and I'm excited to see this kind of new crop of guys that they have coming from the international level, and all the boys I saw in the backfield last year. So I'm excited for this year too, and, you know, see what's implemented and, you know, get some buzz, talk to some people and see what the Rockies are doing this year.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. For Jeff, for Jesus, for everybody tuned in, on the podcast and on the YouTube. I want to thank you guys for joining us today. I want to thank all the subscribers out there for subscribing. It's why we have an opportunity to do this and break down these farm systems in such great detail. Thank you to all of you, and have a great week.